This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 266, An Apple a Day. Hello and welcome again, we're hoping again, to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I am coming to you from the Chapel Hill studios of the Games at Work Empire, and delighted to be connected remotely and at an appropriate distance from my co-host and friend, Mr. Michael Rowe, in the Durham studios. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Michael. And I also want to welcome all our massive new listeners who are stuck at home and got nothing better to do, so they've decided to pick up a new podcast, or our current listeners who've shared it with people who will become new listeners after this episode.
All the retweeting that we've seen going on by people, too. Thank you. That's helps spread the good word. And we've got a rather interesting show this week. It will not be COVID-centric all the way through, but we have a few pieces of that particular puzzle that I'm sure we're going to touch on and talk through. But we've got tech. We've got cars. We've got 3D virtual worlds. We've got a whole range of things. So shall we jump in?
Absolutely. And if people hear the my neighbor who's mowing their yard, I apologize.
We know he's doing a good job.
Yes, because he started it as soon as we hit record, which is great.
That was perfect. Perfect timing. All right, so we're going to dive right in with a follow-on from last week, where we talked a little bit about the 3D printing of valves for respirators and other kinds of spaces and places. And over the last few days, I came across an interesting article that with the shortage of these ventilators, respirators, et cetera, one super creative idea was to use a diving mask and refit it with a particular valve that would allow for it to be hooked up to a machine.
I thought this was so cool. Isn't it? Looking at the video and just, I mean, these types of diving masks were kind of what you would remember in like the 1960s TV shows of the future diving masks.
Yeah.
Like so the these space exist masks. Now. These are full face diving masks. So not just the goggles or not just the breathing apparatus, but both of those built together into one giant mask, which makes a lot of sense from a medical use perspective, because it covers like all the orifices on the front of your face, right?
Oh, yeah.
And makes it much safer.
This reminds me of something that I need to go hunt down too, but a friend of mine has actually created, followed up on a 3D printing thing to create a face mask that then you could put cloth over and you could drop in cartridges for filters as well. So I need to find that, because I know you'd be interested to see how that works too, Michael, given that you've been in the 3D printing space for a long time.
Yep.
I don't have it. I asked for it.
The great thing about this is, this is very inexpensive equipment that, because it's designed for when you're underwater, it's got to have a good fit, right? So it's not, just throwing something together that may not have enough efficacy from a clinical perspective, but it is designed for full immersion underwater. So therefore the fit, the seal is better. The fact that they have, they've used it both for CPAP masks, right? As well as for just a pure ventilator capability. They have multiple different valves that they can attach to it that are all 3D printed. It literally just clips on where the regulator would clip on, or the hose from the regulator would clip on from a scuba tank. So very easy to use, very easy to print and adapt. I was amazed by this. This was incredible. It was a great example of how innovation in times of need can really drive forward the basic design principles of something to make it much more effective for something else, very, very cool. And they announced that the designs and patents for this would be completely free to use.
Yes, yes. I thought that was great, too, just to grab it and make it available to whoever wanted it, you know, right from the start. And the speed of distribution of these kinds of plans allow anyone with a 3D printer to cut the supply chain down to, I need the resin. That's it.
Yeah.
Right.
Over-the-counter purchasable diving mask and a 3D printer.
Yes.
So.
And when you think about, you know, that level of innovation, and we have plenty of examples of this. There's one tweet that we'll include in the show notes here, too, about how major manufacturers, this particular one talks about Ford, what they're doing to manufacture and change over their lines to do respirators. The creativity that's coming into play of repurposing existing fans, battery packs that are available, and of course, right back here again, 3D printed parts, right? So we've had some amazing stories around this for a while. We've talked about how 3D printers and fabrication can help in submarines where the supply chain is the submarine and the people on it and maybe an internet connection. So you could download something new, but, boy, you know, we're now seeing what can be done in relatively short amount of time across the board and fast. So love that.
Yep.
Staying on the technology front here for a little bit more on the mobile side of things, there was a Mac Rumors article where multiple mobile networks in various countries are putting the hashtag of stay home when people connect to cellular networks instead of Wi-Fi. So instead of it saying, you know, your cellular network on the top of your phone, you have the hashtag of stay home as a reminder to practice that social distancing and don't go out and hit the cellular network and travel around unless you really, really, really have to. I thought that was pretty clever. And I thought the Swarm team from Foursquare was pretty clever as well, where if you check in somewhere on the Swarm app, it's asking you the question of why are you even out at all? You should be staying at home.
What are you doing outside? Don't you know you're supposed to be inside? Swarm at home.
So that's that was interesting when I saw that as well. And kudos and a tip of the hat to them for doing what they're doing there.
And I remember us talking briefly about that last week. And, you know, the question that I had, because I don't use Swarm or Foursquare or any of those apps anymore for some time now. Does Swarm also work with your watch? So would it pop up a reminder on your watch saying, hey, it looks like you're somewhere new?
For me, it doesn't have that function. I can check in from the watch and just, you know, pick out the app on the watch and touch it. And it'll prompt me for, I think you're here, 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 and you can choose which one you are. And you can check in that way, but it doesn't say, hey, I think you're here, you know, do you want to check in? It doesn't do that.
Ah, okay.
Which is probably better.
Probably a good thing, because otherwise it'd be just burning your battery noticing things.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I have noticed on the latest update of iOS and watchOS, my battery has been draining. And it's been on my devices for about 2 weeks because I had the developer betas and the developer gold master, because the latest release came out, I think, on Tuesday, right?
Was it that late or was it? It was this week. I know I applied
so it would be
right
Tuesday.
Away.
It always comes out on Tuesday.
Yeah, it must have been Tuesday. And there's some neat things in the new release, too. One of the first ones, and I'm interested in your take on this because I know you've played with ARKit as well. There's a new available ARKit capability. ARKit 3.5 is available. And naturally, neither one of us can take advantage of the LiDAR scanner because we don't have the newest of the new iPads that have LiDAR in it. But I'm curious to get your take on anything that was new that came into this.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the reason that the LiDAR update for ARKit is so important on the new iPads is with LiDAR, it will map the environment effectively instantaneously versus if you've ever used any of the AR apps on, I think pretty much on any mobile operating system right now, you have to kind of scan the environment a bit. Mm-hmm. And then it eventually goes, oh, find a flat surface. Oh, there it is. And it'll place the object on it. That's because it's using basically trig to do the mapping and figure out the shape of the environment before it finds a surface that it can attach the AR object to. But with the LiDAR, it literally, you know, puts the scatter out very quickly, instantaneously uses that to measure the shape of the environment, and will allow for near, almost real-time placement of objects correctly.
Wow.
And then they can stick. And
they can scale them.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's all the basic stuff, but I'm talking about from a pure how do I deal with the environment perspective, mm-hmm. it leads to near instantaneous environment recognition, which is why LiDAR is used in cars that are doing, you know, improved automated driving, et cetera, because it gives you that almost instantaneous view of the 3D space you're in. Now, what's really interesting to me on this is if they've been able to get the LiDAR down to pretty much the size of a camera lens on the back of the iPad.
Yeah.
All the rumors about the Apple glasses start making sense too, because the smaller you can get that, the more you can put that on the glasses. And now you have AR on glasses in real time.
Ooh.
And before Apple enables that, they always like to have a rich environment of apps. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the rumor mill that's going on some of the really, you know, technical detail developer podcasts is this is the first step. And it's the reason why they released this iPad before WWDC would have been. So that
to give people a chance to work with it,
to work with this AR kit and with the updated APIs so that, you know, Tim Apple has been saying for some time that AR is their next big bet. Well, you start seeing pieces coming out that say, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the time where it becomes incredibly accurate and fast to where that user interface that you expect from Apple in AR becomes available with iOS 14 or iPadOS 14. And I'm extremely excited about this. Who knows? We'll see. Any day now, right?
Yeah, when those new iPad Pros start reaching everybody, right?
Yeah, well, and that's the really cool thing. You and I both have been playing with an iPad Pro with the new release for various amount of times, and about last weekend I enabled mouse support, which I think is the next article that we have discovered.
Yeah.
And I was playing around with it, and I had an old Apple Magic Mouse, the one with the trackpad on top.
And I remember. Yes.
Yes. And so I turned it on my iPad Pro because I'm really thinking of getting the new keyboard once it is enabled or available. Because I don't need a new iPad yet. When the iPad goes really crazy new, then probably. But I've got the 2018 iPad Pro and the Apple keyboard case with it. So getting one with a trackpad would be interesting. But before I, you know, threw down $300 for that, I wanted to test the cursor experience. And I played with it briefly last summer when mm-hmm. it was more of an accessibility feature. And it was kind of, let's say, awkward. Well, one of the really cool things is how they've updated the UI to give you better hints on how the iPad's mouse cursor is working. And mm-hmm. oh, by the way, it's also programmable by the developer. So if you have a special change to the UI that you expect in your app, you as a developer can codify the cursor behavior. So what's cool is as you move the cursor around on the screen with the mouse, it goes from a pretty small pinpoint, which is probably about 10 millimeters, maybe 15 millimeters wide,
mm-hmm.
To the shape of the thing it's over. So if you're over a button, the dot disappears and the entire button highlights. If you're over text, the dot disappears and you get a vertical bar. And then when you go between light and dark areas of the screen, the the dot will change colors to kind of better be visible or to be visible better. Neither of those sentences sounded good on the screen for the thing that you're on. And it's kind of cool in that it kind of fades to the other color. My gut reaction would have been to just do it immediately, but I guess it looks kind of neat. And so I've been playing around with it, and I've been able to do kind of all the mouse features of, you know, the top right lets you pull down Control Center. The top left lets you pull down all your notifications. The bottom, that, you know, that little bar that's on the bottom of the screen that you normally take your finger and scroll left and right with?
Right.
If you click that, it takes you home. If you bring your cursor all the way to the bottom of the screen, it will pop up the dock. I haven't tried click and drag left and right. I bet you that would work for me to flip between apps. What hasn't worked is the gestures that they talk about. Because even though the Magic Trackpad is a track, the Magic Mouse is a trackpad on top of a mouse, it's not recognizing any of the gestures, like the five fingers scrunch where you kind of go home that way, or right. Two finger drag and two finger tap and three finger this, that, the other. So haven't been able to test everything out yet, and maybe, you know, we can test it out with the trackpad soon. But I'm pretty impressed by what they're doing and just the behavior of doing better things with the iPad with a mouse. So I don't know.
You know, I see a couple of interesting things in the design language here that's very appropriate for iPad OS. And the appropriate things are the way the cursor appears. It's not the arrow like you see in Mac OS or Windows or anything. It's a circle, which is kind of like your finger touching something. So there's an invitation to let your fingers do the walking, so to speak, just the way it's presenting itself. So I like that. And I can see where that will be really interesting if we started seeing some of this carrying over into macOS, which would be, to me, precursors of having touch screens on macOS, which, you know, lots of ink has been spilled on that already. The other neat piece of this article you found, too, that I thought was pretty cool was the notion of how rounded everything is. So naturally, a circle is rounded. But even when it moves into a vertical cursor inside of macOS, that is typically an I bar. You know, it looks like a capital letter I, and everything is very sharp edges, you know, very precise and everything. And so here the language is it's more organic. It's more, you know, interactive, right?
Yeah. One of the things I was listening to one of the podcasts this week, and they were talking about, you know, this is an opportunity for Apple to completely rethink the mouse, right? Because it's not take the mouse from Mac and put it on an iPad. And you see that through all the design language, the behavior, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see how this evolves. And another crazy rumor, I don't know if this one's true yet or not, but because the new iPads, all of them have 6 gigs of RAM on it, right? And because they're enabling a mouse and a keyboard and a touchpad and all this type of stuff, that perhaps this is the beginning of the transition of ARM, macOS for ARM, or at least for turning the iPad into a development device to where you can actually write code on it. That I would like to see. And if you remember last summer, I said maybe the next release will give us a development environment on the iPad.
Well, you know, a good keyboard is a big important start of that too. So, you know, all the pieces are coming together. You're right.
Yep. So we'll throw a link in the show notes also on just how to set this up if you want to play with it yourself, both for the iPhone and the iPad. So we'd like to hear what you think. Have you tested it out yet? If not, go test it out and let us know what you think.
Great. You know, you found another related article to all this too, is that with all these updates that have come out, and you know how Apple does it, you know, every device is updated, every operating system is updated, there's now the universal purchase support across Mac and iOS apps, which is another
they hinted about this last year at WWDC, and it's one of the reasons why I released Wasted Time for the Mac, as well as for the Watch, as well as for iPhone and iPad, which is the initial versions, right, was with the idea being you get it once and you get it everywhere. The only problem is if you did this using Catalyst, which is what Apple was pushing to take your iPad apps and make them a Mac app, you cannot turn on universal purchase support for your app. So those who jumped first, this, I can't do it. I actually have
What you're talking about, Willis?
Exactly. So I'd have to create an all-new SKU and an all-new app identifier inside the app. So basically, I'd have to do Wasted Time 2.0 or something like that in order to bring it all together as a single universal purchase support app. Now, the good news is my stuff's free.
Yeah.
But for those developers who jumped first and jumped early and really spent the time to do this, and it's a paid app, you won't be able to do that. You actually have to create a new version that puts the same app identifier across all platforms. But I was glad to see this. It'll make it easier for people who are developing, you know, really good iPad or iOS apps to make them available on the Mac.
That was the intent. Let's make it easy, right?
Yep.
Don't know quite how we'll hit this particular segue, but you know, we're back into virtual worlds here too, right? So we talked a little bit about augmented reality. We got a virtual reality story here too, and Michael, you found, you know, an article here about Linden Lab and Sansar.
Yeah, people who've listened to the show for a long time may remember when Linden Lab, the people who make Second Life, started their VR environment about 5 years ago. They spent a lot of time, effort, and money trying to bring together a Second Life-like experience, but in VR on the Oculus Rift and other platforms. Mm-hmm. This is what Sansar was called. Sansar is who they're selling it to. They had worked on this for some time, and I remember trying to get into it, but I didn't have any VR devices. And I just couldn't get it set up and working on a non-VR environment. I also didn't have much time to do it. But Second Life is calling it quits on that project and selling the assets to Sansar. Selling the assets of Sansar to Sansar. Related to Sansar. Okay. There's Sansar is the platform. Got to remember this. And the company is Wookiee Search Technologies, who's buying it.
Right. W-O-O-K-E-Y, for those of you who are spelling at home.
Yes. Sad to see this. Maybe this other company will be able to make a go of it. I mean, Second Life is still around, and it's funny with everything going on. I've talked to people, we talked about on the show last week, and I've talked to people since then who've kind of dropped into their old virtual worlds again, just to, you know, have that sense of community and getting those memories back. This is one you won't be able to do with for a while. So it's a sad story.
Well, on a little bit of a happier front, and we're going to talk about some proven technology that gets another boost here. We've got an OS2 story of all things.
Yeah, and I threw this in there. So in that thought of nostalgia, over the last week when I had a little bit of downtime, because I've, you know, had some vacation this week planned, I went in VMware and I tried to rebuild my old OS2 environment, and I couldn't get the TCP stack to work, a couple other problems. And I had been using a company called Ecom Station, or a product called Ecom Station, from way back in 2003, which was when IBM was basically shutting down OS2. Another company kind of put a wrapper around it and was updating drivers and things of that nature. Well, I couldn't get work. I did some research, and there's a company out of Virginia called Arkanoa, I think is how you pronounce it, that actually has been keeping it alive. So I've actually built an OS2 environment in VMware, and was playing around with it over the last week, and it was actually really cool. You can get latest versions of Python. It handles screen resolutions. The network's nice. Fine. I'm running Firefox 45, so not completely current, but close. And it was kind of neat to go back and remember the object-oriented design of the entire operating system and the way it behaved. And so it was kind of in that theory or that thought of memory lane, it's kind of cool. And these guys have been around for some time because, as you mentioned, that was a long time stable environment, and there are still, you know, banking customers, there's, you know, high-end engineering firms that still have stuff on OS2. And on their site, they list some of those companies. And I was kind of impressed to see you still using it.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. I'm just kind of, you know, clicking around on the site here, too. And it's nice to see it continues to be used and maintained and supported. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of fun. And it was really, really neat to play with it. And I'm still setting and tweaking and doing other things. I might set up a development environment on it and see if I can do wasted time for OS2. What the hell?
That would be fun, wouldn't it? So if we go from the older to the newer, I am super happy to share a little electric bubble car from a company called Micro Mobility Systems, who have designed what is essentially a 2020 version of the Azetta.
Yeah.
And it is just like, wow. I mean, three of them could fit in a normal parking space. The front opens like an Azetta does, and it's room for two people, and there's enough room for, you know, put a couple of cases of, you know, your favorite beverage from the grocery store as you're staying socially distant, of course. And it is cuter than a button.
It is. I love the video. The video is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So go check this out. I am a little partial to the mint green because it just, you know, kind of screams 1960s at you. And
well, I love red.
Love the design language.
Yeah. I love red. So the red is in my wheelhouse.
Ah, I guess I'm not surprised. and you know, another thing I wasn't super surprised about here is with all of the artists and the artist community all over the world contributing to what they can into the world right now, and it's hard to do when you can't be all together. You had referenced a link from the Durham Savoyards with a recording, a YouTube recording of some of the top songs.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, I'm actually on the board of directors or board of governors for the group, and we were supposed to be, the reason I'm off this week is we were supposed to be performing our annual spring performance of a Gilbert and Sullivan show. We were going to do Patience. That was canceled due to COVID-19 and stay at home and all the other activities locally. We've gotten it rescheduled to August 6th through 9th, assuming that that holds. However, everybody's remote and people are, you know, trying to practice, and we've been trying to, you know, put out every couple of days a little video to give people their Gilbert and Sullivan fix. So this one was actually one I put together last summer. It's about 45 minutes long, so it's a longer video, but it is one song from every Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, including Thespis, in its entirety, staged by the Gilbert and by the Durham Savoyards locally, I thought it would be kind of cool to just let people to take a look at that and kind of remember what they could have been doing this week if they were at the theater with us,
and get a chance to repeat and listen once more to some of your favorite songs performed by people if you've been to these shows that you know and love. That's exactly. Awesome, Michael. 43 minutes of shows. That's great. I'm going to be doing that this weekend for sure.
Cool. Well, I think that puts us right at the end of time.
It does.
And we hope everybody's staying safe, staying distant, but not socially, just social distancing.
Yes, exactly.
Washing your hands and maybe get out on Twitter or on Facebook or on our website at gamesatwork.biz and let us know what you think. What interesting games or technology is keeping you interested and engaged during these stay-at-home times?
Exactly. And if you see some things that are just, you know, outstanding examples of innovation, creativity, we'd love to know about them and bring them up on our next episode when we talk about them right here on gamesatwork.biz.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.